Last week, the Capital District chapter of Showing Up for Racial Justice, or SURGE, hosted an educational workshop entitled "Won't the Real Slim Shady Please Stand Up? An Exploration of White Supremacy in the Media That Upholds It," at the Albany Social Justice Center. Using video clips, images, and text, Rosie Galvan guided the participants through an overview of how the media upheld the concept of white supremacy in the United States across a span of time. WOOC producer Elizabeth Press sat down with Rosie and Lyndon Kudlitz from SURGE to discuss the workshop, White Supremacy, the Media, and the Work of Showing Up for Racial Justice, as Lyndon explains.
SURGE is part of a multiracial movement for racial justice. It's a national network of different chapters that engage white people in racial justice and also really take the lead from leaders of color around the country and locally. So every chapter should be accountable to different individual and organizational leadership of color.
So SURGE stands for Showing Up for Racial Justice.
Yes.
So SURGE exists nationally and locally. And here in Albany, what is the chapter and what are you guys focusing on?
So mainly locally, we work on mobilizing white folks to support different actions that are occurring or protests that are occurring. We have a wealth redistribution committee. So that group of folks seeks to look at efforts that can financially support the work of people of color and help white folks funnel money into supporting that work. So it's a way of kind of, again, redistributing the wealth that white folks may have access to that people of color may not have as readily accessible. And also try to provide spaces for white people to dive into racial justice and look at privilege and power and how we show up in demonstrating allyship to people of color. And we try to do that in a way that, again, both follows what people of color are really asking from us, but also creates a space for white folks to talk about these things sometimes with just each other so that we're not causing further trauma by discussing our feelings and experiences around racism and doing that on the backs of people of color.
So SURGE recently, I think last week or the week before, held a workshop on white supremacy in the media. Now this is a topic near and dear to me. I was really excited to go and check it out for WOOC, mostly because I'm a media maker and educator who works in this field, and it comes up all the time mm-hmm. in my classroom. So how did you come up with this topic? And yeah, it seems really, really timely today.
So there's an education committee as a part of SURGE locally, and we months ago put out a survey to folks looking to see what people really wanted to learn more about, with the intention of SURGE being a space where we could hold workshops and provide opportunities for education, knowing that some of those topics are things that maybe could be covered by white people in the sense that, for example, we might do a workshop for white Jewish folks, diving into what it means to hold those identities and continue to show up for folks of color, and that might be a space that is led by white folks. And then we also wanted to dive into topics that might really be taught by people of color in the community. So in this case, when we did the survey for workshops, people asked for information on addressing racism in the media, what that looks like. So we reached out to Rosie Galvan and asked if she'd be willing to do this workshop. And so while SURGE knows that it's not right the responsibility of people of color to educate us and that we need to do a lot of that work amongst ourselves, we also know that SURGE is really uniquely positioned to provide a platform to invest in educators of color so that when white people are learning directly from people of color, that they're also compensated for that time and valuing of those skills, and that it's really coming from those folks. So this was really the first educational workshop that came out of that survey. We had other topics like bystander intervention or people wanted to talk about how to raise white children in an anti-racist way. So I think we are going to see some more workshops in the future, which is exciting.
So, Rosie, we also have you here with us today. Thank you for joining us.
Hey there.
So, can you describe the workshop? What did it cover? Now, reflecting back, what are some highlights for you?
It was a huge topic, white supremacy in the media in the United States. So I just picked a few decades to focus on, starting with the 1890s and ending with today. So some of the highlights were, one, just seeing how the tactics are very similar to what we use today. So I showed an image from 1893 from Life magazine of indigenous folks murdering white folks in a church. And then showed an image from, I believe it was Time magazine. No, it was the New Yorker, the winning caption illustration. And it was a modern day version of that with a cowboy hiding behind a desk and with bows and arrows being shot at him, with the caption saying, just give him another casino. And then within just showing like media and stuff like that, I really wanted to point out what was actually happening during that time. So, you know, it happened to be the same year in the 1890s, the Wounded Knee Massacre, and just showing the progression of Native genocide during that time specifically. And then also highlighting what Native folks are going through today when that caption was written in The New Yorker. So that was a highlight for me in doing the research for it, is just seeing how much the media covers. And then in terms of the participation, a highlight was, honestly, like Lyndon mentioned, for folks of color and other marginalized group, we tend to have to do a lot of educating anyway. And it's often in spaces where I'm caught off guard and don't know what to say or what my response is. So it was really nice to take time to really thoroughly think through and figure out how to curate the conversation and have power over that. And also having the compensation piece, too. It was like a way to honor my time and honor my experiences. And I'm just used to, you know, working with white folks or having conversation with white folks where people aren't very open to have the conversation. And it ends up being a very demoralizing experience. But to be in a room full of 50 folks, you know, that came specifically to do the work was so refreshing for me. It's not an experience I have very often, to be around a large group of white folks who are, you know, there to do better. So it was so empowering to have folks committed to learning how to dismantle, just being more aware of how the media does shape what we think and how that does have immediate consequences on the lives of folks of color.
I teach an intro to mass communication class, and in our textbook it says, you know, there's this one point that the media is not supposed to tell you exactly what to think, but how to think, what to think about, what's the timely topics right now. And we were recently discussing in class the idea of headlines, and it was something that you actually covered in your workshop on white supremacy and the media, which is just how headlines are written when someone is a victim and is black, or a person of color, and when someone is a white perpetrator. Could you just give us like a little bit on that, and what was your point in that moment of the workshop?
Sure. And it's actually really easy to look up. If you look up headlines in Huffington Post, you can probably find the article that shows all the different headlines. And it was really not shocking because we are aware of these things, but it was really impactful to see them one by one, how Black victims are portrayed. And even when they're victimized through crime, through violence, it's portraying like them as having done something wrong or there being some moral flaw. And then in turn, showing white perpetrators, like folks who've bombed schools and who've actively participated in mass shootings and stuff like that, highlighting their moral virtues, like what a, you know, upstanding guy versus like guy with criminal past, you know. And one thing I would add is it's not just the clips or the headlines. It's what we then think about people on a day to day. So if you see headlines always showing Black men as these violent predators, then you're going to call the cops when someone's on your block or in your neighborhood, even if they live in the neighborhood, as we saw with Trayvon and George Zimmerman becoming this vigilante cop. And, you know, and so it really does affect who ends up in prison, how the cops interact with people. Like the cops also consume this media. and have this perception of folks, how folks receive healthcare. If, you know, your doctor has these perceptions of your community, they're going to think you're lazy. They're going to think you don't care about your health. They don't think you drink soda all day, versus your neighborhood has been cut off intentionally from fresh fruits and vegetables. You actually don't even have a supermarket in your neighborhood. So I just wanted to just make that point that it's not just the headlines. It's also then what we take from that and how we treat people on a daily basis.
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard when it's also like we're in this week and we're starting to think about like the media around us, right? And what's been happening with kind of this, what is it, hashtag take a knee. These players who are kneeling or sitting out during the national anthem and sort of how hard the president is coming down on them right now. And you can think about that in the context of what just happened in Charlottesville and how he was very nice or forgiving to the neo-Nazis and how it was both sides' problem in that. Like, how do we do this education and hear this coming from this, like, you know, very important figure, supposedly our president, who's reinforcing everything we're trying to undo with these workshops?
Yeah, and, you know, when you said it out loud, it actually reminded me of the headlines. Like, you know, how he portrayed the folks in Charlottesville is there are some very nice people there, versus like how he's been talking about like folks of color literally fighting to stay alive. But I think that what's difficult about it, and I think the point of my training was what gets left out of the conversation and what's left invisible, and that is white violence. So the fact that folks are more upset about people kneeling during the national anthem and not as upset about people being tortured in prisons, being snatched from their families to be rotting in prisons for decades. Interestingly enough, I know it's kind of veering off topic, but I work at the Department of Health and there's a lot of conversations about opioids right now. And, you know, my boss mentioned that he went to a conference and that they're hoping to start safe injection drug sites, you know, where folks can inject safely and prevent overdose. And the first thought I had was, wow, it's so awesome to be a white person using drugs. We certainly didn't see that or have never seen that for folks of color who live with addiction. And so I'm kind of veering off topic, but it just reminds me of a concrete example of how we respond differently to different people. And I mean, the president's... it's really not surprising, you know, that he's taking this stance, but I just think it's very hypocritical of anyone critiquing folks, because if you're about the national anthem and patriotism, then it's also about free speech and exercising your right to protest. But yeah, I just think there's just a lot of irony in what we choose to be upset about. And the fact that, like, even like when riots happen, like folks are more upset about windows being broken than lives being lost and taken. So I just wonder how folks, especially folks who tend to be more conservative and have a moral code of sorts, like how do people, I don't know, process that? And how do you, I don't know, have morality for one thing, but then these glaring oversights for other values?
Well, speaking of like oversights, all this attention is spent on these players, mostly players of color taking a knee, while one part of our country was just hit by a Category 5 hurricane and is struggling right now, still without power, Puerto Rico.
Yep.
And how do these two things sit and over, like, whitewash or ignore sort of the struggle and devastation that's happening?
And even before the hurricane, like the ignoring climate change and how if the scientists had been saying for decades that the countries most affected would be in Europe, we would have already said climate change is a thing. So, you know, it's not even like the response now. It's the lack of response decades ago when we had the science at our fingertips and the warnings that this is going to happen. And, well, you know, it's going to affect islands. It's going to affect mostly brown folks. So who cares? So it's like it's not surprising to me that this kneeling thing or there's a lot of diversion around it, because if we cared, we would have done something before climate change had gotten so out of control. It's now irreversible, actually.
Also, I think, right, because of, like, years of things that have taught me in the media to care more about white people than about people of color. It means that when I view the media, when I see that, I know that there's something inside me, as much as I hate it, I know there's something inside of me that cares more when that is like a natural disaster or climate change or something that strikes communities that look like me versus communities like Puerto Rico. Mm-hmm. And it's that, right, noticing that is painful and important, but like undoing that and thinking about why it is that is just so naturally there for me, or I should say naturally there, right? It was like caused, but the fact that just comes up is part of the work of white people like me, right? That's part of what we need to be doing as we're digesting that media.
Mm-hmm.
And I hate that. I hate that that's what I'm saying, but that's also very real and very much the truth.
And the fact that you're aware of it is a huge first step. You know, it's a cliche, but it's so true. And that's an integral part of any behavior change is noticing it.
Yeah.
So the fact that you are aware of, like, I have a different reaction depending on who's suffering is huge.
Yeah. I mean, I'll give an example, right, that, like, when I'm scrolling down through a Facebook feed, right, as an LGBTQ person, I am seeing issues of violence play out in my communities all of the time. And I think probably a couple of years ago, I started to notice that I would stop on the headlines and the faces that were white.
Mm-hmm.
And I would be scrolling past the violence that was occurring to LGBTQ people of color.
Mm.
And again, noticing that was painful. And it really spoke to that racism that sits within me, right? That's why I say, like, yes, I am a racist person. I, as a white person, am racist because I inhabit these biases. I inhabit this stuff. And that plays out in my actions, whether I'm aware of it or not,
mm-hmm.
right? But noticing how I take in that media has been a big part of trying to undo all of the things that have taught me to be racist.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of which, Lyndon, Serge is holding a follow-up workshop to the one that Rosie facilitated last week. Next week, when is it? What are the goals? Why? I feel like it ties in somewhere to what you're talking about right now.
Sure. So when Rosie and I were discussing this workshop and what she wanted to do with it, one of the things that came up was, you know, knowing that it was going to be a lot of different people in the room. And Rosie, I believe you had said that you wanted a space for white folks to kind of work out our stuff, right, without doing that within really earshot of people of color, because there's some stuff that maybe we're going to say that's pretty messed up that we need to process through. Mm. And so instead of having, like, breakout groups during the workshop and really wanting to prioritize the content of what she was working on, Serge has offered to do a follow-up to that workshop that is designed for white folks who were present for it, but also anybody else who wants to join in, to really debrief some of what was talked about in the workshop, process some of our own thoughts and feelings, and then to also look at how racism in the media is playing out both nationally and especially locally right now in our areas. So that meeting is going to be Tuesday, October 3rd from 6 to 7:30 p.m. At the Albany Social Justice Center.
Right. And something that Lyndon shared before we started recording that I thought was really beautiful is who gets to theorize and who gets to experience. And that's part of privilege and oppression. And I certainly didn't want the workshop to just be me sharing information. I really wanted folks to prioritize action steps. So it's not just like you feeling really good in the moment, because it happens with a variety of trainings, even when they aren't repression related, where you feel really awesome in the moment and then nothing really happens because there's no coordinated strategy around it. So I really appreciate the commitment to do the follow-up so that you don't only debrief, but you also figure out next steps to mm-hmm. take action locally, because that's really where the power lies.
Yeah. It's really easy for, I think, the white people sitting in that workshop to sit there and just think about this stuff and to talk about this in theory, right? It's an educational topic. Mm-hmm. I'm going to academically learn about this thing.
Yeah.
And that is not an option that people of color have, right? That's not an option that folks have when it's really like their lives on the line, and where, you know, some of the video clips that you showed, like, that is what people have been experiencing. That is their life. Mm-hmm. Whereas for white folks like me sitting in the audience, I get to sit there and learn about it. Mm-hmm. Right. So part of, for white folks, part of the work is moving from a place of thinking and theorizing to a place of feeling and action. And that's an example of what that, you know, what that space on October 3rd hopes to provide.
For those just tuning in, I'm Lavonia Mallory.
And I'm Dave Pueblo. You're listening to the Hudson Mohawk Evening Magazine on WOOC's 105.3 FM in Troy. That was Linda Kudlitz and Rosie Galvan from Capital District Surge talking about white supremacy and the media with WOOC producer Elizabeth Press.